We're going to do a little small group interaction, not immediately, but in just a minute. See, so for what you missed in the break by having such a short break, you can make up for by diligent work in your group when the time comes. So we'll get to that in just a second. Put that on camera. Good. Well, what is the contribution of wisdom literature? Well, you can see from my outline that I think it's very touching. It touches all of life. I'm convinced, and I say this, I've kind of alluded to it before, but I am very convinced that wisdom literature deserves greater attention than it often gets in our churches and in our own lives. Now, it is beginning to get a lot of attention. You know, for a while, people would buy little New Testaments, you know, which is a quarter of the Bible, if I haven't mentioned that before. New Testament, it's actually 23% of the Bible. And then sometimes you'd get a New Testament in Psalms. And now, you can even buy a New Testament Psalms and Proverbs, which is kind of cool. But even cooler would be to buy a Bible, which includes the Old Testament. So it's beginning to get more attention. It deserves great attention. Well, why do I say that? Well, the Bible is intensely interested in life and how to live it, and we ignore its instructions to our own peril and how quickly we do that and to the peril of our children. Now, here's what I want us to do in our small groups, and I'm only going to give us I may be able to give us 12 or 15 minutes to do this. And here's what I want you to do in your small groups. I want you, first of all, to think of maxims or sayings or proverbs that we have about that we use, that we know, that not biblical ones, but just other ones in our culture, that we use in relation to child rearing. Okay, what do we say that has to do? And there's got to be a lot of it out there, though I couldn't think of a lot of it. But what kind of sayings do we have about child rearing? And then secondly, I want you to having just made a little list of that, and someone should write these down, because I'm going to ask you when you come back, you know, what do we say? And those of you who are international and have some exposure to other sayings, if you have a really cool saying in your own language or something, your own culture, or a different culture, know of one, give us that one by all means. That would be interesting too. And then I want you to search quickly. You got to teach a Sunday school class in 10 minutes. And you forgot. So I want you to search quickly in the book of Proverbs. Use your concordance. Use your cross-references. And see if you can compile a few little, at least a few proverbs on child rearing. Okay, maybe particularly the disciplinary acts of child rearing. Okay, that'll maybe get you started in some place. All right, so I want you to do that right now. And it's going to be short and sweet. So try to make the most of your time. Find your group, 12 to 15 minutes. We're going to cut it off right here and let you regroup wherever you're comfortable sitting. Now, the only problem with this little exercise, it did seem that it was sparking a lot of things, and I saw so many good sayings that I couldn't think of. We're not going to have time to share them all, but I'm going to let you just pick one or two from your group that you feel are gems, and we'll take a few minutes to toss out sayings that we have, that you've heard or that we've heard. And I saw some I've never heard, which I won't say on tape necessarily. But who has one? Just let's begin throwing some out. Yes, Nichelle? Okay. Yes. Uh-huh. Hard. Yeah. Yeah. That one's graphic and classic, so I'm going to put this one on tape. It's unusual. It's not one that I heard as a child, but I and it takes a while to think about it. And it's a little colloquial, but it is. A hard head makes a soft butt. Okay? Now, you do a little bit of research, think back to your childhood days and when you were stubborn and how your parents had to deal with you, maybe you'll figure that one out. Good one. Yes. Yes. Monkey see, monkey do. Okay, well, that yeah, what you... I see. That was a substitute. You're unwilling. Now, look, it doesn't have to get too colorful here now. Yes. Don't do as I do as I say. That's still not the one they want you to say, is it? Yeah. What is it? Okay, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I heard some other group over here thinking it was an acorn. Well, it doesn't matter. Same idea. Okay, others. Now, let me limit it a little bit. What do we say about disciplining children? Because I'm going to focus it in that direction. What do we say about disciplining children? Children are meant to be seen and not heard. You know, as quiet as I am, I did hear that one from time to time in my home. I can't imagine why. Now, that's not a very modern one. That one's fallen into disuse because modern parents, if anything, are there simply to serve their children. So they seldom would say that to their children. Yeah. Yes. Okay, spare the rod and spoil the child. Now, that was probably on the top of more lists than any other one. That's the first one that came to many minds. And that question, isn't that biblical? Isn't that a biblical one? Is it? Not the exact words. Okay. Not the exact words. Maybe it's important to look at the exact words. Isn't it? Well, you had one over here about spoiling. Get a life? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was... I think I heard that one through my childhood years and on beyond. I don't know. Get a life. Yeah, that's contemporary. But didn't you guys had one about one that was, is it a Korean proverb or Chinese proverb? I'm sorry. Korean proverb. What was it about spoiling? Okay, the habits of 3 years will continue to 80. Okay, there's a Korean proverb. That's a cool one. The habits of 3 years. That's similar to the group back here, as the twig is bent, so inclines the tree, that the rest of the group claimed they'd never heard, or some of them did. But there was one about children are for spoiling or something. Hoping that you would come up with spare the rod and spoil the child. In terms of this one, 23, 13, and 14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. Now, let me say at the outset that I am aware that there is child abuse out there in our societies. I am not advocating child abuse. Although I do think it's a distortion of biblical truth to suggest that any corporal discipline is child abuse. That's something that is very confused in our society. But I was spanked at a child, and look how good I turned. No, seldom, of course, only as often as I needed it. But well, let me give you an example. I did. Okay. Talk about my son who could understand the difference between striking and spanking, okay? I think we need to bring that back into our own consciousness. But notice the difference. We say, spare the rod and spoil the child. Oh, little Johnny's a bit spoiled. Such a shame. Well, big deal. He'll grow out of it. Well, if we think of spoiled milk or something, it might be closer. You know, absolutely ruined. You know, if he who does not discipline his children, or she who does not discipline her children, is not saving them. What was this in 23, 13, and 14? Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. And that's a little more sobering. Now, some of you may have found, yeah, Sheol would be the grave, probably. Yeah. Let me just throw out a few to you in the interest of time, because I know you've found these probably, and I'll take them a little more in order and just comment on them briefly. Proverbs 13, 24. Probably many of you found that one. That's a good place to start. 13:24. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. He who spares the rod hates his son. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Oh, I spoil him. No, you hate him. It's not easy. It's never fun. And it takes energy to discipline a child. But if you love him or her, then you go to the effort to do it. What about Proverbs 3, 11 and 12? I'm sorry. No, let's skip that one. We memorize that one. Proverbs 19, 18. Discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. Do not be a willing party to his death. That's Proverbs 19, 18. 22:6 is a favorite, the exegesis of which, the interpretation of which is somewhat questioned. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Some construe that positively. Others construe it negatively. I think we may have mentioned that one in terms of the necessity we will soon feel to discuss what is a proverb. Is it a promise? Often people claim this as a promise, although, it's sometimes interpreted negatively. Let a child go his way, commit him to his way, and even when he's old, he won't depart from it. He's not going to grow out of his misbehaviors. He'll just change their manifestation as he gets older, as she gets older. I'm just trying to remember. Did I cover a lot of this already in this class? I don't want to go on tape twice. Okay. Whew. Because I teach in various contexts, and sometimes I think, oh, I've covered that, haven't I? It's in my notes, so I assumed that I hadn't. When we were in Germany, we had a neighbor, a little neighbor girl, who one day was found with a stick in her hand beating my son Philip over the head. Now, she was about his same age, but she was bigger, and she was tougher than he was at that time. And so, and this was not the first instance of child-to-child abuse. And so my wife, you know, kind of took the two children and rescued our son and took the daughter up to the mother of the daughter and said, you know, this is getting a little dangerous. You know, she does have this big stick and his head is still soft. And the response was, well, you know, her response, she's a good woman, but she said, you know, the problem is you intervene too much. If you'll just leave them alone, eventually, the daughter, whose name I won't give, lest she ever see this tape, eventually she will realize that what she's doing is hurting him, and she'll stop. Okay? Well, yeah, it's funny now. It wasn't funny to Philip, but at any rate, you know, the point is, she may realize that what she's doing is socially unacceptable. You know, we have to put the sticks down at some point. You know, as we reach teenage years, I don't like you, boom, boom. You know, but we come up with more sophisticated ways of inflicting harm and hurt, don't we? You know, we don't just kind of grow out of these bad behaviors. Well, let a child go his own way, and even when he's old, he won't depart from it. That's a negative way to look at it. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Even if he goes astray a bit, there's hope that he'll come back. We'll talk about how to view that one eventually. Look at another one, Proverbs 22:15. Proverbs 22:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. That is a biblical view of fallen human nature. That we, even as children, are born in sin. Not that the sexual act that brings us into being is a sinful act, but we are born sinful. We are born indicted. We are born guilty. Folly is bound up in our hearts. And so something needs to, you know, quintessentially, of course, God's work in our hearts will drive it from us fully. But also there's the discipline of parents that help us to walk the straight and narrow and help us to keep away from the paths that onto which we shouldn't stray. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from it. One time we were discussing this in a small group, and one of the men in the group said, I take that rod metaphorically. You know, and he said, I'm one of those who would never, ever, under any circumstances, spank my child. And by the way, spanking is done in the right place, in the right spirit, and leading to a right restoration and expression of love. And a lot of people don't understand that, but you know, and I don't have time to get into it, but don't just go wailing away on children in your anger. That's child abuse. Spanking's something entirely different, and children know that. Even children know that. But he was saying, I could never do that because I was physically battered. I was physically abused. I could never, ever spank my daughter. Okay. Another woman in the group said, I was verbally abused. I got so many tongue lashings, I wished my parents would simply spank me and get it over with. And I think, in fact, she had the better point. That had her parents simply said, an offense has been committed, this is the punishment, here it goes, and we're doing this because we love you. That was one of your other sayings. This will hurt us far more than it hurts you. Okay, would you like to change places? Come on over here. Give me the handle. You know, give me the brush or whatever it is. Give me the little paddle. I'll work it out. Now, let me help you. This will hurt me far more than it hurts you. I do this because I love you. We say that, and it's important to say that, so that they know that it's not an expression of anger or hatred or anything like that, but it is an expression of love. And then it's over and done with, paid in full, and then a loving relationship is restored. That's far better than tongue lashing. When's that over with? When does that hurt stop? Where does the loving, you know, restoration come there? Well, eventually maybe there'll be an apology, but that's eventually. I even think for young children, spanking is better than timeouts or campusing or go to your room most of the time because it's quick and over with. Now, again, there's room for difference of opinion, but the Bible does say the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. There does seem to be a place for corporal punishment. Proverbs 29, or corporal discipline is maybe a better word, 29:15. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. We've all seen it. Some of us may have been there, done that. Children do get away from us. There was another the saying about, I can't remember, and we're running out of time, so I can't get into it. Let me just hit a couple of glancing blows, and then we're going to talk about the midterm in just a minute. I kind of wanted us to do this little project in groups, though, and talk about this one practical issue, because I think these books, and the reason I get excited about them, is they talk about real life. They talk about life where we live. They talk about all of life. They touch all of life in some way, shape, or form. And they also, my second point there, is that these books touch all of us. Hassel Bullock, in his introduction to the Wisdom books, says, one might read the Pentateuch and see only a faint shadow of himself reflected there, or the historical books may overwhelm him with facts and events. The prophets, by some mere chance, may pass him by with their deep convictions and concerns about their own societies and world. But the poetical books find him where he is. We can't escape, because this is where we live. We rear children. We struggle with how to use our wealth. We struggle with our own laziness and the necessity of industry. We struggle with our tongue. We struggle with our stubbornness and our unwillingness to be teachable. All of these things are addressed in the Wisdom books. It touches us where we are. And it draws us into wrestling with these things. Derek Kidner says, a lecture or a sermon with its one-way flow can make its points tidily and at leisure, but a lesson that draws the hearers into answering and asking, into working things out painfully, may well get further into the mind than any discourse, even if at times it deliberately leaves many questions unresolved. Even if we can't figure it all out, even if we're left with a few loose ends, we still may have learned more in the process, because we're struggling with real issues and real life. And that brings me to my third and final point that I wanted to mention. And another reason that I get so excited about these books is that these may be the touchstone, the first way of touching unbelievers. In the course here taught on, what is it called? Is it called Outreach to Contemporary Cultures, or Apologetics and Outreach? Yeah, whatever the title is. One of the things that Jerem Bars stresses, I think, I haven't taken the course, but I try to inquire it. I hear these things from students. He talks about finding common ground with unbelievers, where you can then develop a bridge to them, have something that you, a place to start with them, and to understand them. Well, we're all in this life together. Again, we all struggle with those things that I enumerated earlier, and particularly, say, with child rearing. Often, our neighbors who don't know the Lord are still struggling to raise their children. They love their children, want to do right by them, and they may be clueless, and they may look at us and say, "How can you do that? Why do you do that?" And without just, pulling out the big book and say, "Well, it says in the Bible," you may not want to start there, but you say, "Well, it's the way my parents trained me, and a book of ancient wisdom says that's the way to do it, and it stood the test of time, and look how well I turned out." But nevertheless, it can start a conversation, deal with some practicalities, help them see how there is wisdom there, and then gradually point them more and more to its source. And that can be the entrance of our unbelieving friends into the Word of God, where they will find true life. So don't think in sharing the gospel, you always share the full-blown gospel first time around. You may share a mini-gospel that has to do with one little issue, one little problem in that person's life. Now, we have time, if we stop now, to give a brief orientation to the midterm. So let me do that now. And again, I'm sorry to not allow further questions, because I saw so many good things on your sheets, but we'll have to leave that for later. Or in this case, perhaps never. Now, orientation to the midterm. And we are going to tape this because the midterm will be similar, if not identical, to the one taken in this class. That is not an encouragement to any of you to go out and sell pirate copies of the midterm. They will not remain in your possession. But for the video audience, this will be pertinent for them as well. Now, in terms of, someone asked me, are we going to have a review? Well, not in 5 minutes. My way of reviewing would probably be to go over everything again, and that would be a little dull and boring. Watch the tapes or something. Instead, what I'd like to do is just alert you to the kinds of things, to the general format and shape of the midterm. The focus will be, and this is going to be a little unsatisfying to you because you'd like to see me eliminate a lot of stuff. But I'm not going to do that. The focus will be, as you might expect, on lectures, Bible reading, and the secondary reading, particularly Longman and that little bit of Kidner that we have read so far. Now, the assignment that I give you, which I haven't written on the board, there is an assignment actually for next time, which includes reading, preparing for the midterm. Don't leave until I write that on the board. That will not be tested for next time, but you do need to read it in preparation for our lecture time, which will come after the midterm. So, lectures, reading, Bible reading. I don't expect you to know what's in every psalm in the 150 psalms, okay? But you might want to look back at, you know, we talked about some messianic psalms. We talked about some imprecatory psalms. You might want to be able to pull a few messianic psalms out of your memory. You know, where are they? Where are the imprecatory psalms and such? But Longman, Kidner, McCann, remember the two chapters you read in McCann. A little less on Matthews and Benjamin. You've read a section in there. That'll be very, very brief and very general, what I might ask you there. Okay? Now, in terms of the form of this midterm, it will be mostly objective, not exclusively objective. By the way, your memory work would be up to and including this week. Okay, so I'll have to do that Proverbs 14 myself. But memory work, mostly objective questions. I'm going to give you a few samples of that so you'll get the idea. And some of these samples might even appear, but I'm not going to read many of them. And this is not the test as it will eventually look. Memory work, some short answer questions, a few short answer questions, and one essay. I'll give you a choice of two or three essays that you can choose. But I'll ask you to write one essay because I want to give you a chance to express yourself coherently in writing. And I encourage you to kind of think about, now you won't have a lot of time, so I'm going to have to keep this reasonably short next week so that you can do it in an hour. You'll write a short essay, think about it a little bit, kind of formulate it before you begin diving in, if you write better that way, and try to be crisp, concise, and cogent, okay, in your essay. Now, let me give you a few examples of the kinds of objective questions you might encounter. And these can be things from fill in the blank to true and false to multiple choice, that kind of question, which in a smaller class would not be ideal, but in a class this size is something of a necessity to do some of that. Let's see. Something like this, true or false. The majority of the Davidic Psalms are clustered in books 3 and 4 of the Psalter. False. Okay? The largest number of Davidic Psalms are in books 1 and 2, and there are some others that follow, but not grouped in 3 and 4. Blank often referred to the book of blank as an anatomy of all the parts of the soul. Well, Longman did, but he was quoting someone else. Calvin. Okay, yeah. Calvin. It lets me know that I'm going to have trouble grading this. Somebody say, well, Longman does too, and so did you. It doesn't matter. How about this? Proverbs 10:1, a wise son gladdens a father, but a foolish son grieves his mother, may be classified in Loth's terms as internal, external, complete, incomplete, synonymous, antithetic, synthetic. Okay, I won't ask you more than a couple of those at most, but you might want to go back and look at those terms just by way of classifying. We're not going to take time to answer that one because that would take some time. So anyway, just those are some of them. This is not a midterm that I'm looking at. It's the reason it's taken me a while to look at different ones. I'll give you one more. Emblematic parallelism. Emblematic parallelism, this is a multiple choice question, is a subcategory of synonymous, antithetic, or synthetic parallelism. Synonymous. Okay? It takes some thought, maybe. Think about what emblematic is and think about what synonymous is, and then you could put the two together. All right. An example of a short answer question might be something like, this could also be an essay question, actually, but compare and contrast the formal features of Old Testament hymns and songs of thanksgiving. You know, if you think about the basic structure of a hymn, remember we talked about those formal types, hymns and songs of thanksgiving. Compare and contrast those two and comment briefly on their respective functions. Remember, the difference is a hymn is extolling an attribute of God or a kind of a cosmic action of God, like His creation, His creative nature, whereas a song of thanksgiving is more specific. It's thanking God for a specific act that He did on behalf of a specific person or people in a certain specific situation. Okay, so a song of thanksgiving is far more specific. Here's a good one that we've been talking about tonight. You know, this could be an essay question. Describe the two basic categories of wisdom teaching found in the Old Testament, noting in which books the one or the other tends to be predominant, and reflect on the significance of each type for today. Now, that's really a question that would be better for a final when we've had, you know, when we've discussed Proverbs and Job and Ecclesiastes. Then you'd be able to say things like, well, you know, if someone is struggling with midlife crisis, he may need to understand that, to know that God understands what he's feeling about the meaninglessness of his week by week existence. You know, I get up in the morning and I go to work and I come home and nothing ever changes. Well, the writer of Ecclesiastes had understood that feeling perfectly. Now, we haven't gotten there, so I'm not going to ask you that particular one, but that's the kind of question that you could be asked. Okay? Any questions on the questions? Well, I feel only when it's necessary. Only when I feel that I've done a poor test. Okay? I mean, I often, by the way, when you come in, if you feel like, yikes, I'm really blowing this, don't forget that others may be as well. And there is the possibility. No test is perfect, so I do sometimes curve tests. But I don't do it as a matter of principle for any and every circumstance. Okay? Good. Yes, Teresa. You're responsible for the Psalms, and oh, let me write the assignment on the board before you leave. You're not really responsible for the Proverbs. You're only responsible for this lecture on wisdom literature tonight. Everything we've done up to tonight. But here's your assignment for next week. Read Kidner chapters 2 and 3. Kidner chapters 2 and 3. And continue reading the book of Proverbs. Because we want to have time to finish that. Continue reading Proverbs and, of course, prepare for the midterm. All right, that one probably goes without saying. Okay? See you next week. It comes up first thing, so be on time. I'll try to do the same.